Vueta sambhavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutangamang sangham namassami. So our meditation practice offers an opportunity to gain insight into how this mind, this body functions. And with practicing meditation, in one sense we may think we're doing one thing, like mindfulness of breathing or attempting to let the mind become calm and still. Actually, there's also a whole lot of other things going on there. Particularly if you've been practicing for years, you might recognize the development of patience. Patience with this kind of crazy mind that we can experience, that we come directly into contact with in our meditation. Not that we're not in contact with it the rest of the time in our daily lives, but in our daily lives we're moved by our mind, we're moved by our thinking mind. And when we don't have mindfulness, we don't necessarily recognize this. We just are moved by it, moved into actions of body, speech and mind, and moved emotionally by the thought processes of the mind, by memories, by experiences that occur. but when we sit in meditation, which means, you know, literally what we're doing, letting the body be still for a while in a relatively comfortable, balanced position, and we're left with this momentum of the mind, which is a habitual momentum, a karmic momentum, which gives us an opportunity to just be with that. And meditation is something, you know, we learn through experience. We always, inevitably, we come to meditation, the idea of meditation, but we come to it with ideas of what it's going to do, or how it's going to impact us, or how it should impact us, or how it should be, according to the various manuals or the various teachings, or the even now the scientific. You notice everywhere you go, you know, on the list now, you go to the doctors or whatever, or read. As I often find myself as I'm getting older, Googling symptoms of bodily degeneration. What does this mean? So much of it points to stress. And their recommendation for stress is meditate or do yoga or find something relaxing to do, right? So this is a good idea, to meditate. It really is a good thing. But it doesn't necessarily bring you that stress relief all the time that you think it should. Now this is an interesting process. I don't know. Is that my experience, or does everyone else agree? Is that your experience too? It's not always a peaceful thing, right? And that's because we come face to face with the momentum of this mind and the habitual patterns of the mind. And if we don't understand what's going on, that can actually stress us out a bit more when we don't know. We're trying to get involved with what's going on and either force the mind to be peaceful or try to think it into being peaceful, or beat ourselves into submission by some other mental processes, you know, to try to stop thinking with the thinking mind is a recipe for absolute frustration. But yet this is all a wonderful learning process. It might not feel like it when we're in the midst of an unpeaceful experience or a manically chattering mind, which is often what we confront. But if we have the patience and the bringing right view to that experience, to just know the mind as the mind, which is waking up to this actual inherent aware quality that is inherently present, is not necessarily involved in mental movement, this quality of awareness itself, that which knows, that simply knows. When we're unable to bring that perspective in, we experience a sense of travelling with the thoughts. I've been caught up in the momentum. For a period of my meditation tonight, I was building cupboards, watching them. You know, I have a very visual mind, and thinking about a certain place that needs cupboards and what's the best way to construct the cupboards. You know, and that went on for a little while, and I recognized what was happening. And then either you can make a problem of that, which, you know, my mind used to say, oh, snap out of it, get back to it, because you've just wasted blah, 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 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. Oh, you're not doing it right, whatever. But now my mind is like, oh, just caught in a wormhole for a while. Time is relative. Who wants to put a time on it? It's just, now it's gone. Awakening has re-emerged, or wakefulness, or awareness, as a predominant factor of presence, nowness, presence, mindfulness has re-emerged, and that whole mental construction is dissolved in that moment. There never were any cupboards. You know? Now this is the important insight in meditation, to see the power of mental construction and how our attention gets sucked into it, like down a wormhole, or Alice in Wonderland down the, what hole did you get? Rabbit hole. Or the wormholes of the Matrix, whatever you want to. Or the literal wormholes in space, I think there are actually things called wormholes, but you know what I mean, don't you? When your attention totally gets pulled into mental construction and the mind is constructing a subjective reality, whether it's functional about building cupboards or you're constructing your day tomorrow, I'm going to go here at this time, I'm going to make this for lunch, whatever. What do I need to get for shopping, constructing your shopping list or whatever, or deconstructing your bedroom or deconstructing your relationships or whatever. Whatever the material is, in terms of Dharma, doesn't actually matter. But to be able to see that constructing process happening, and that it's a subjective experience in the moment, and that when presence and mindfulness re-emerges, it dissolves. That's what's important. This seeing this constructing and dissolving, constructing, dissolution. You know, and when we look in the Dharma, we're talking about the sankharas are like the constructing activities of the mind. There's mental processes, most of them, all of them, habitual processes that have a certain momentum. It's inevitable. Meditation is not about destroying those or trying to forever never have them again. You know, to have the perfect empty mind that no longer experiences any constructing activity. That will never happen. Or at least I'm not speaking from being a point of arahantship, but that the arahant, the Buddha, knows sankharas for what they are. But he no longer gets sucked, he or she no longer gets sucked down the wormhole of, you know, perpetuating, giving more energy to it. But getting, you know, that full clarity on seeing that this is just a process of mind. It doesn't really go anywhere. It has some functional reality, you know. If you have to build cupboards, it's good to think it through first, you know. Or if you have to sew a garment, it's good to think it through, measure and before you cut, etc. So this is just the practicality, the way the mind works. It's not a problem in itself if it's used, if the mind is clear about what's happening and we're not sucked into it as a real reality. So this is where we can suffer, because you know the mind can construct all sorts of subjective experiences out of past memories, out of our fears, out of our hopes, out of our desires. And when we get caught in it, when we don't actually see that process for what it is, when we're caught in it, our hopes turn to disappointment, our fear might turn into anxiety, you know, more chronic anxiety, our desires, we might follow them for a while, but as soon as things change, as they always are, as they always do, and things never turn out the way we expect them to, then if we're not aware of what's going on, we will end up feeling disappointed or caught in a place of suffering. And then having to kind of tunnel our way out of it one way or another with more constructing activities that we're not necessarily understanding. So meditation, in the Buddhist meditation, in insight meditation, this is our opportunity to observe these mental processes. So we don't want to demonize them. You know, many of us in our early years of practice, we start to wake up to the fact that we're really trying just to control things here, you know, keep certain stuff out of the mind and try to generate wholesome mental processes, cultivate metta, kindness, compassion. We're trying to keep the ugly stuff away, thinking that's letting go. Right? And after a while, we wake up to the fact that, you know, I'm just putting a lot of energy into control here. So eventually, we start to relax a bit more and just let, as Venerable Jayasaha was saying in the meditation gardens, we let things come, but you stay present. We work to stay present to what is, to recognize what's happening so that we see them come, but we can also see them dissolve, we see them change and disappear. And yes, we might get sucked into our attention might get sucked in to believing the mental constructions for a while, but the more energy we put into presence, mindfulness of body, mindfulness of mind, recognizing feelings of pleasure, pain, recognizing sense activity just for what it is, hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, knowing. Just when we see that reality for what it is, without judgment, within our own experience, things begin to clarify of themselves. So letting go, we start to see that letting go is not actually another activity. In fact, letting go is resting in a certain sense of openness, a certain sense of stability, with the quality of mindfulness, presence, and seeing that things are already in a flux and a flow, when certain things arise. But if one can maintain presence, one sees that they change quite quickly. And that's an experience of non-grasping, non-clinging, not latching onto, as Jayasaha was saying. So this is really what needs to be developed, this capacity to open, to be present with what is, to recognize the activity that's happening, And to slowly, we learn slowly, to slowly explore what it is to let attention rest in the present through mindfulness of the body, keeping the body still for a time. It really helps that. So when our attention is absorbed into the various mental constructions and memories, projecting into the future, or even kind of daydreaming, we can start to recognize that. The more presence there is, the more mindfulness is, and wisdom to not push against it, but just to see it. Oh, this is anicca. This is the experience of the senses showing us its own nature, which is a flux and flow of experience. And really the way this mind relates to that dictates whether we get pulled in or can allow the stream just to move on. So the importance of recognizing this characteristic of anicca, the Buddha's teaching, you know, the main insight teaching that leads all the way to full release is seeing all of this mental physical activity as anicca, as changeable in and of itself. Because it's changeable, it's never staying the same, despite what we think. We might think something is unchanging, but if we actually allow the mind to experience it, we'll notice that it's actually always in a process of change. And because of that, there's actually no stability within something that's changing, within these conditions that are changing. So the sense experience of hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, all of that falls into the realm of conditioned reality. So all of that is an experienced as flux, as flow, as changeable. And the Buddha said it's actually not worth hanging on to. We do clutch on to certain experiences out of habit or not seeing clearly, out of wanting, not wanting. And that's, you know, our natural condition, that kind of what we call being born into such things. But the result of clutching or clinging on to something that is inevitably unstable and changing is this experience of dukkha or unsatisfactoriness. It's kind of like riding a horse, a wild horse that you can never break in a way. But when you realize that, when you realize that's that is not worth clinging to, something starts to settle all by itself. So this is to be experienced. That settling, what's happening there? Why does the mind settle when it actually sees that something is changing, is not worth clinging to? The mind just sits back. So that process of when the tension is drawn in and of itself is like feeding and perpetuating. So we continue to experience a sense of movement and change. But when the wise mind, the clear mind, actually recognizes anicca, not worth buying into, because there's no stability to be found there, there's no peace to be found in those things, that resting back, the mind drops into stillness in and of itself. And it may just be for a moment, but this is really important for the mind to see, to understand that process. It's quite hard to explain, but when you experience that, something recognizes, this is the peace that's possible. And you latch onto that and you try to keep that going somehow, right? Because we haven't fully seen clearly. It can't be gotten. It can't be created. It's actually the experience of the uncreated, if you like. The mind that rests in non-creating or non-constructing. The unconstructed mind, the unconditioned mind, or the unconditioned reality. It's there to be accessed, to be experienced, or to be known directly by each one for ourselves. And yet, ironically, it seems, we can only know it through really understanding the quality of anicca in relation to the sense experience that is continually changing. That's when the mind disinvests. Once it sees clearly that something is in its own natural state of flux and flow, it's unstable, that there's no peace or satisfaction to be found by continuing to invest one's energy and attention there, wisdom divests that attention for a moment, and then the unconditioned aspect of the being is experienced. And you recognize this as actually the true peace that you knew was possible in one's own heart, one's own mind. So nothing has changed except the clarity of the mind seeing what's going on. And it just takes some time to explore. And that's what meditation is about. It gives you that opportunity just to explore. So in effect, you know, we can feel a bit disappointed by some meditations if we don't. You know, if the mind doesn't settle down or is not peaceful. But it's quite important to wake up to that feeling. So that's not what it's about, actually. Just see it. If there's a moment of seeing even that disappointment as a value judgment, now based on a memory, and not worth clinging to, not worth defining myself by or as. And when that drops away, when the mind no longer clings to that, it's all dissolved. To experience that dissolution, that dissolving, and the peace of that is what we call this insight, or an aspect of insight. So I'm reminded just now of one of Ajahn Chah's teachings that often gets quoted, because people have always talked about, you know, having good meditations or bad meditations or not so good meditations. You know? So Ajahn Chah said, "Well, good meditation is good. Bad meditation is also good," because he's saying that, you know, we can wake up to anything. Actually, and he directed a lot of his teachings in this sense, you know. He said actually even pleasure and pain on that level, happiness and suffering, is of the same value when we see it with wisdom, because they're just experiences in the moment. When we see it with wisdom, that's done. It is what it is, and there's no clinging to it. We don't define ourselves by it. We don't identify with it. The mind can be free of those experiences, even as the body-mind is experiences. So these khandhas, they don't disappear for the arahant, or the enlightened beings. They just have complete clarity on what they are, the activity of body-mind, and they're no longer identifying with it, defining themselves by it, being moved by value judgments over one or the other. You know? They're just seeing the processes for what they are. Understanding, that final understanding that it's not really what I am, these are conditioned processes, ushers in a great peace and clarity. So we can begin to understand this on a conceptual level and grow our wisdom mind through cultivating mindfulness. Mindfulness, presence of mind, it's always actually available here and now, always possible here and now. I just think of it now in terms of just attention getting shafted or being pulled into habitual mental activity, or waking up to that and allowing attention just to rest in the moment and seeing things that do come and go as anicca, dukkha, anatta, not so much with the conceptual labels, but the experience of, yes, there's this flow of change. And we know when we get stuck on something, we want to hang on to something to be a certain way, or we don't want something to be a certain way. We know that feeling as dukkha in the moment. As soon as you know it, it can be released. Mm-hmm. And when you experience the release, you understand that characteristic of not self. These things dissolve, yet there's still presence, there's still mindfulness. And there's this deeper sense of resting and trusting in that. So this is our opportunity in meditation, and obviously it carries into our life. You know, we're dealing in our lives, obviously, with a lot with things that appear more concrete and solid. You know, but that is actually just on the appearance level. Everything that we experience in life and encounter, have all things have been built up, actually. First out of mental processes and then, you know, literal buildings. We have to think of them first before we can build them out of physical materials. But nevertheless, they come into being through mental activity in the beginning that drives the physical activity. So as I said, it's not about thinking that none of that should be happening, or that stuff is delusion in and of itself. Really, the delusion is in the mind that just doesn't see it clearly for what it is. The delusion is that leads us into suffering, you know, the experience of suffering about the way it is. And so much of our dukkha, our emotional dukkha, is about resisting things playing out the way they're playing out. Isn't it? Because going against the way we hope they might. Mm-hmm. So our learning in our life very much is often just looking at that hope and fear, and wanting things to work out this way or not wanting, what I call the wanting and the not wanting. And it doesn't mean I'm not talking about, you know, abandoning your moral compass. You know, it's not about that. It's definitely about hanging on to your moral compass, but continuing to observe the mind that clings. The mind that clings is actually like almost like something that, it's like trying to dive into a stream and stop the flow of the water, in a way, you know. It's not going to happen, but, you know. There are things we can influence in our lives, and if we can for the better, then we should. But at the same time, we're watching our mind in relation to hope and fear. You know, releasing fear and even releasing the hope not for want of wanting a better world or a better circumstance, but seeing that actually hope, in this case, it's just one kind of word, but it's linked to fear, and linked to the wanting, the really wishing for something, and the wishing something wasn't. This is the desire of bhava, karma tanha, bhava tanha, and vipava tanha, this movement of the mind. So just to notice it, that's what's intrinsically creating anxiety and actually creating a sense of, at its root, creating a sense of separation for this sense of ourselves, that wanting and not wanting, pushing against things and wishing things were some other way or wanting something else. Just notice when that comes into play, what that does to your sense of being. When we're not tuning into the way things are, when we're not open to the flow, to the way things are, when we conceive that it should be differently, it should be different, or I should be different, we experience this sense of almost shrinking into this, almost a sense of a small, separate reality that's no longer open and in contact and actually part of the world in flow. So that's that sense of the ego self who feels so separate, and it's based on fear, based on wanting, you know, conceiving that things should be different than the way they are. They would be better if there was some other way. So we can just recognize that movement in the heart and the mind. As I said earlier, just the recognition, we don't have to get rid of it. Sometimes just seeing it for what it is allows the whole thing to open up or dissolve or collapse. And that's what's to be experienced. So trusting this process of working with mindfulness, or allowing ourselves to become mindful, remember that process of being present, whether in meditation or being present with what we're doing in our daily life. Trusting that that's allowing you to be open to what is, and then to contemplate what arises in the heart in each moment. And obviously at work, you can't just stop. When I say contemplate, I mean really know it at a visceral level or an experiential level, to meet it. We don't contemplate doesn't necessarily mean think about something, but it's being with something. Like tasting a fruit you might never have tasted before on that first bite. Everything's open to experience. What is that? There's no value judgment on it. Maybe a few seconds later, once you've experienced it, oh, it's a bit like banana, it's a little bit like kiwi fruit. We start bringing the memory and the packaging it in concepts. But those first few moments is that savouring with an openness to know, what is this? It's like that. So this is the quality of moving through our life with mindfulness and that sense of presence which gives rise to wisdom. When we're interested enough just to observe and to know, recognize what happens. Don't be afraid to experience dukkha, because when we see it as the first noble truth, it actually can release. If we fall into fear of it, fear is usually based on memory, we resist the experience, and that actually keeps things concretized. You know? Resistance is like a magnet. It keeps exactly what we don't want in play together with our fear. You know? Very interesting. The old Chinese adage, which was very instructive for me, when we turn to face our deepest fears, we may never have to meet them. Just that act of being open to turning towards something, it shows its impermanence, its changeability. It never really was what we thought it was. It's just another process that's arising and dissolving. So fears, our fears are conceptually built and projected onto things. That's not to say we shouldn't have them, but just to, when they arise, be interested. What's that about? Not to think about it so much, but listening to it, explore it. Be open with it and see what happens. Keep seeing the changeability, the tendency of the mind to cling, the push-pull. See the unsatisfactoriness of that and just practice with opening, releasing, trusting in this quality of awareness, this knowing nature, which is inherent. It doesn't depend on you creating it. That's the thing, you don't have to do it. We just need to recognize it's already inherent. So I'll just offer these few words for us all tonight for our contemplation.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.